At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
The inner critic, us versus normies. I mean, where else will you go? Or that's the title of a reading, right? The inner critic, us versus normies. Most people know the inner critic as that annoying voice that pipes up when they make a mistake. But for those of us who grew up in chaotic or traumatic homes, the critic didn't just form from everyday correction. It became fused with survival. It was the part of us scanning for danger, trying to anticipate rejection, and keeping us small enough to stay safe. That's why our critic often feels harsher, more constant, and more personal than what others describe. Let's explore the difference between the inner critic for trauma survivors and for normies. Number one, the source of the voice. For most people, the inner critic develops from everyday socialization. Teachers correcting, parents setting rules, peers judging. It's unpleasant, but usually balanced with affirming experiences. For someone with complex childhood trauma, the inner critic is often an internalized caregiver whose voice carried shame, neglect, or emotional abuse. It isn't just critical, it's fused with survival. The child needed that voice to anticipate danger, avoid punishment, and maintain some sense of safety. Two, intensity and relentlessness. A non-traumatized person's inner critic tends to flare up situationally. For example, before a presentation, a trauma survivor's critic can be constant background noise, scanning for flaws, shaming every misstep, and even attacking them for having needs or emotions at all. Three, identity versus feedback. In less traumatized people, the critic might say, "You messed up." In complex trauma, it's more likely to say, "You are a mess." The critic doesn't just comment on behavior, it corrodes identity. Four, connection to shame and survival. For survivors, the critic is deeply tied to toxic shame, the felt sense of being inherently unworthy. It's not just about avoiding mistakes, but about warding off abandonment or rejection. The critic polices them to stay small, perfect, or invisible, so they won't lose connections with others or trigger harm. Five, developmental hijack. Childhood trauma often means the critic took over at an age when there wasn't yet a strong, compassionate inner voice to balance it. So instead of being one inner voice among many, it can become the dominant narrator of selfhood. In short, everyone has an inner critic, but for those with complex trauma, it isn't just a nagging voice. It's a survival strategy turned persecutor, rooted in early attachment wounds and shame. That's why it feels more cruel, more constant, and harder to separate from who I am. So some questions for y'all. Where is your inner critic showing up in your life right now? And what does it sound like? Whose voice does your inner critic most resemble from your past? When your inner critic shows up, does it feel more like I did something bad or I am bad? And in what ways, if any, have you noticed the voice of your inner critic soften or quiet over time? So I've shared before, and I think that we talked about this the last time we had the inner critic as a topic for discussion, about how for those of us, especially for some of us, and especially for people who maybe didn't receive direct verbal abuse, how the inner critic doesn't show up like as a voice, like it doesn't necessarily have a voice, and it's more of a felt sense. And that has been the case for me. And so with that being the case, it makes it a lot more difficult for me to identify when it's active, especially because it just intensifies and activates the parts of me that it thinks that it's helping, which are a lot of parts, but primarily it's like a hypervigilance and impending sense of doom part. There is a learned helplessness part that is just thinks that like our life sucks and we can't do anything about it. There's like an overthinker, self-doubt part. And then they're all kind of working to protect exiles, that like one that just feels so unloved and like we're all alone in this world. And then another one that's just like so scared of like abandonment and rejection. And, you know, I've really been triggered by like just I shared whenever it was a week, 2 weeks ago about having to drive by my parents' house when I went to get my hair done. And just a lot of what I realized, grief getting stirred up within me. And I've been really blended with my parts since then. But what's been really interesting is like the critic has been very loud, but I've been a lot more aware of it than I typically am. I'm typically just not even aware that it's there. And just the way that this has been showing up for me mostly is like I'm trying to work on my first episode back, and it is just this, especially like the self-doubt overthinker part, like it's just been absolutely just like fucking relentless over the past week. And so I had therapy on Thursday, and you know, there were several parts that are active, but my therapist suggested, you know, getting to connect with this inner critic, because I really haven't been able to connect with it before. And it took some time for me to be able to get there, because like my other parts are really scared of it. Like my other parts are really scared of my inner critic and almost view it like this. It's almost like this boogeyman in the shadows that they don't necessarily really see, but they feel it, you know? And so once I got those parts to kind of like back down some and give me a little bit of space, I was able to connect with this inner critic part. And the messages that tells me like mostly is like, you know, you're just such a loser. But what I got out of it was that it really doesn't believe the things that it's telling me. It sees my potential, and it sees me not living up to it. And what's really interesting is like that is kind of the one verbal direct criticism that I did receive from my parents, like when I was acting out as a teenager, was just like, you're so smart, you're so this, why are you such a fuck up? And so a lot of it doesn't come from me. And so this critic thinks that, you know, it's helping me by telling me these things, and thinks that it's like motivating me, you know, in a way. So what I've been doing since then is like the past few days, like I've been not trying to work on that episode at all and giving these other parts a break and telling my inner critic, these parts are really scared right now. Like these parts are really scared, and we need to not push them. We need to give them a little bit of space until they can start feeling safer. And I know that you think you're helping me, but you're making things worse. You know, you're making things worse for them. So that's what I've been doing. Like Friday, I took myself shopping. Yesterday, I went and did a pasta making class, like pasta from scratch, which was really fun. And I've just been trying to like take care of myself and give myself a little bit of a break, and just like checking in with this, well, checking in with all my parts on a regular basis this week, which is something that like I've been having a hard time doing. And how can these parts start to trust me if I'm not connecting with them on a regular basis? So fingers crossed that like, you know, I can make some headway there, because I don't think I realized like how much the inner critic is fueling so many of my other parts. And I think that in order for me to like make some progress with these other parts, they need to not feel the inner critic's presence so much. So that is my share, but go ahead, Nate.
So this topic's been really sort of at top of mind for a long time for me. And then in working through therapy over the last 4 or 5 months, this sort of quieting the internal critic and sort of realizing that the internal critic doesn't really need to be there with the same loudness that the internal critic has been there for a really long time. And I think for looking at the list that you posted in the reading for today, the connection to shame and survival is really where this stems from for me. And we went through the process of having a retirement ceremony for the internal critic and the external judge, sort of to two sides of the same coin in terms of being critics. And this comment that I put in my little speech to retire two parts that didn't, you know, that don't need to be there quite as often. The whole discussion of you stood watch and directed me as to take any and all actions to avoid looking like my fucked up family. And that sort of shame of who they were and the things that I wanted to do. If I look at it right now, I've worked hard. I've become fairly successful at what I do. I like my job. I have a happy relationship at home. It's kind of like all of these things are really, really good. But then there's this sort of crippling doubt that I'm not good enough for certain things. And I think as I look through it, the crippling doubt prevents me from doing the things I want to do to be happy outside of my household. So how can I get to the parts of life where you're experiencing things, you're finding joy and happiness outside of the normal things that you do and the habits that you've made? And I think this whole discussion really, I feel a weight lifted off of me having done this stupid thing where we got cupcakes from Dairy Queen and we had a little party at our house, just the two of us, to sort of move some of these things forward. But I think saying the things and doing that exercise really lightened me. And I look at it from the perspective that my eyes are open to, you know, signing up for the things that I'd like to do and that I've talked myself out of. And I'm a great talker outer. And I guess I'm a great talker inner at first. And then when it gets time to do the thing, I'm an amazing talker outer. And it's kind of like, you know, when you go to dinner, do you want to have a steak or a piece of salmon, or do you want to fill up on potato chips? And for too long, I've been choosing the potato chips, and I'm going to choose the steak from now on. So that's all that I have to share on this. This is a really great topic, and I will pass the torch to someone else.
This is a great topic, and I too don't experience my critic. Like, I don't have concrete or discrete thoughts in my head, or I don't hear my mother's voice in my head. It's more of a felt sense for me as well. But, you know, for me, my inner critic is not trying to help me. For the way I experience my inner critic is, this is going to sound dramatic, but I swear my inner critic wants me dead. And what I mean by that is having a covert narcissistic mother and siblings with narcissism and my brother with antisocial personality disorder. I grew up in a world where everything about them that they couldn't accept was projected onto me. And in a way, what that felt like was they wanted me to be invisible. Like, they wanted to diminish me, almost like erase me. And I feel that's what I feel when my critic is active. I feel like I'm not significant. I don't matter. What I do is not important. What I say is not important. I'm just taking up space. Like, these are the irrational thoughts that I can't say I know that they're there in my brain, but I feel it all throughout my body. You know, in psychoanalytic theory, the inner critic is the superconscious. And the superconscious is developed by our parents reflecting like society standards to us. Well, my mother did not reflect to me society standards. She reflected to me her internal distorted identity diffusion. And it was injecting it into me because, well, I don't know why. But so the way I experience my inner critic is, again, I'm repeating myself, but it's not trying to help me. It's doing to me what my mom was, with keeping me small. So to me, it's kind of like an enemy. But where is it? I can't touch it. I can't taste it. I can't feel it. I don't know how much it weighs. I don't know what color it is. It's everywhere and it's nowhere. So it's very difficult for me to, it's like my mind has to conceptualize it somehow. And I guess I do, but I just want to like grab it, you know, maybe so I could just wring its neck. I don't know, but that's all I got. Thanks.
I think this is such a great topic. We'll probably talk about this for days, but I would say like 6 months ago, all I could hear was the inner critic. I couldn't hear any other things in my head. There was no loving parent, no inner child. It was just the critic, all the time, the critic. And then externalizing the critic as well. And when you were the section on identity versus feedback, it just reminds me that any sort of feedback just throws me into like an inner critic storm. But it will start with you made a mistake, but quickly runs into that you are a mistake and you can't do anything. And it just like all piles on any mistake I've ever made. It's throwing it at me. But I have really been working on this. And I'm starting to feel other things, so it is getting less. And the other thing, when you like read Pete Walker and he's like, this is how you argue with the inner critic. When the inner critic is in that storm, there's no rebuttal to it. There's no reminder that it's overgeneralizing and catastrophizing and blah blah blah. It's just like I just can't answer back to it. So I look forward to that day. And I'm going to have that retirement ceremony Sunday. I'm putting it on the calendar.
Hey, everybody. Good topic. I just realized listening to somebody, I had to just take a note that my inner critic wants me dead. There's no specific voice that it is, but I do believe it wants me dead. But I think it wants me dead because it's saving me from failing over and over again. That's what it's saving me from that message that you're a failure. You can't do this. So I'll save you. But I will say that I think one of the questions was something about the inner critic voice being a little softer. I have been single for 5 years. The ex moved out 5 years ago this summer, been divorced for about, I think it's been about 3 years now. But when I separated, I had no money. I didn't take any money. I didn't want anything from him. So it was, I had to really like dive in, start working, and people just hired me. People just by word of mouth hired me, hired me, hired me. And I got hired by this man to paint the inside of his house. And I went to meet him. I'd never met him before. And I went to meet him and I walked into his house. And I'm an artist, I'm a creative. And that's been the biggest critic voice is you suck. I said on the meeting last week that I had, if I ever came up with my own brand of stuff, it would be not good enough, paints and brushes and everything. But even that's wearing down. But I walked into this man's house and he had a huge photograph. Richard Avedon is a famous photographer. And he had this huge photograph framed in his house. And I walked in and I immediately saw it. And I have the same photograph. I'd never met this man before, but he had the same photograph. And it was in that moment that I was in a space where I didn't have to explain to somebody why I liked a photograph. There was no critic. There was no weirdness. There was, oh my God, I have that same photograph. And we've been fast friends ever since then. I painted his house. We became friends. I ended up hanging his artwork. I actually saw him today and he's not going to be here much longer. But that's another part of the story. But meeting him and having him have the same photograph was something that changed the course of my life because it was one place, like I said, I didn't have to explain why I liked something because I was always defending myself to my family, to the critic inside me that just grew and grew and grew. So I see that photograph, our friendship develops, and then I get this idea that I want to do a series of drawings, paintings or drawings, portraits of crossing guards. Because I have an obsession with the crossing guards in my community. I just do. It's just a very interesting. They're interesting people and they do a really important job that nobody gives a shit about. Like they walk kids across really busy streets and nobody gives a shit about them, but I am a bit obsessed with them. So I talked to him and talked to him about, I'm going to do these portraits. I talked to him about it for literally a year and a half. Didn't do anything about it. And one day I was at his house and I said to him, God, I feel so weird. Like that this is what I'm obsessed with. And he just looks at me, he's like, would you get over yourself? And I was like, I just like smacked me in the head. I was like, oh, I left his house. I went to Dunkin' Donuts and bought five gift cards. I went and got five $20 bills and five of my business cards. And I put them all, made these little packets, and I went to five different crossing guards and said, hey, hi, I'm an artist. Can I take your picture? I'm going to do portraits, blah, 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 blah. And handed them, they all let me take their pictures. They all were just like, it was so great. I asked them questions about them, just this whole thing. Well, fast forward to what I shared on the meeting last week. My portrait of Edna, the crossing guard, was, I entered it into a juried show and it was accepted. And this Friday is the artist reception. And my inner, it's just like progress, like, that the inner critic can still be there. I love all those hands and things. Thank you, everybody. But showing up, that's why I had to come to this meeting today. I just need to be part of this community. I need to be with people who talk about, I need to be around somebody who talks about having a retirement party for their inner critic. I'm like, I have got to do that. I mean, that's where I belong, is here with people who get it. So I appreciate, thanks for letting me share that. Thanks.
Hello. So I was thinking about sharing early on, as I often do. But then when Kelly spoke, I knew I had to share because Kelly and I each have a narcissist for a parent, or she had, and I guess I had too, because I don't communicate with mine. But my inner critic is also not concerned with keeping me safe. My inner critic is my malignant narcissist father. And this is, you know, awareness and understanding that I've gained over time. A lot of it just being interacting with other people here. But a narcissist inside is a miserable person because they can never get enough of what they want. They can't get enough attention. They can't get enough praise. They can't get enough power. They're never happy. And because they don't have any self-awareness, they just reflect their dissatisfaction onto, you know, the closest people around them. So that's what I have begun to really understand, is my discomfort. Anytime I feel the least bit uncomfortable inside, that's when I really start to panic, because my narcissist dad demanded that his needs, his emotional state, anything he needed be the top priority. And if he wasn't happy, nobody else was going to be able to proceed with anything until his needs were met. So my critic inside, at least a large part of it, it's just always worried about, are other people okay? You know, are other people satisfied? Are other people comfortable? Have I left something unsaid? And it helps me to know where it comes from, but it doesn't help as much with the internal talk of, I know you've been trying to protect me, because that it's not exactly how I feel about it. Anyway, it's a complex subject, but it's a really good topic for discussion today. Thanks for letting me share my thoughts.
Yeah, I think we could talk on this topic for days and months. And I've been around for a while, but I am nowhere near knowing enough about my parts to, but something happened. The reason I chose to share, something happened last week. And if I didn't have my Yellow Book Step group 2 days later to tell them about it, I wouldn't get that my inner critic is, I see myself through my dad's eyes. And my dad wasn't the obvious narcissist. I never termed him that until he died. He's happy, you know, he seemed loving. He was loving. He had a miserable childhood. He wanted the best for us. But in wanting the best for us, nothing was ever good enough. And it was just slightly like, yeah, put your head this way. You're mumbling. Let's practice talking into a cassette recorder. Put your shoulders back. And that's really good. And so I thought I was doing pretty well. And I think I am. I'm not going to be feeling it right now, because what I'm going to tell you is what I still deal with a lot. And I am trying to move into a different area of practice. I was a physician. I don't want to work as a doctor, but I want to help people, and there's patient advocacy, and I'm in a group. And our coach said our August challenge was to do a 30-second elevator pitch. And there's been things happening that are good. They're nothing is for sure, so I'm not putting my money on anything. All I know is what I have today. But it got me more motivated, so I started writing it out. It was a little too long. I got it down to 30 seconds. And then I got my camera. I'm out in my yard. And my head's this way. My glasses are tilted. I keep saying it was horrible. But the thing is 15, 20 years ago, I was giving grand rounds to 100 doctors. I was on TV. I was on the radio. And guess what? That's how I felt. I'm just false. And I got to get over it. I mean, it's time for me to deal with my dad in therapy, although I really want to do the parts work and just deal with me for a while, you know, to understand, because there's different layers of this. And this is kind of core. But my behavior today and understanding that that's getting healthier, I'd rather focus on that. And I'm going to leave it at that. As you can tell, I'm triggered. I'm flooded. And I broke down with my group and I was okay after. And I was one a part of them. We've been doing this a year and a half. I've only met one and we felt like we were sisters. There's like six, seven of us, pretty regular, four or five every week. And it's because of groups like this. Oh, and by the way, I love Crossing Guards. I appreciate them so much, the way that you were. And, you know, I was away from 12-step for quite a long time. And I came back, or I never would have found Andrea in this group because of her sober podcast. And Andrea, I just listened to the last podcast with Paul Gilmartin. I was just listening to him the other day. I think that's where I heard you. I'm almost positive that's where I heard you. But I now know where my people are, my tribe. I don't have to look outside of these rooms. And I just have to trust the process. And some of you might like me and some of you might not. Some of you might whatever. But in this state, in this arena, I'm hearing the things I need to hear to help me. And so I just really appreciate it. And because of what I went through so recently, I wanted to share that. Thank you.
I am having my cousin over for lunch and her boyfriend, who I've never met, and my cousin, I guess, is her daughter. And I'm like turning into my mom because I'm making food and they're like an hour late and I'm getting mad because it's not perfect and they're late. And I realize, who the fuck cares? And my inner critic is that it has to be perfect. It's talking to me while you guys are talking. I also hear my inner critic sometimes say that I'm, and this is horrible, say out loud that I'm a piece of shit. Well, and I don't even remember hearing someone say that to me, but I still hear that in my head when I do things wrong, or in my head that is wrong. Like, I don't know, let's say you had an accident in your car or there was an accident. That's what I hear my inner critic say, even though it was an accident, not I'm bad. But I hear it and I don't hear it as often. But when I hear it, I have to look at it because now I recognize it, because I hate talking to myself that way and it sucks. But my inner critic is a perfectionist and would never let me talk on the phone to you in my garage so you can see all the mess. It would be very OCD and make sure everything's perfectly aligned behind me. So anyways, thank you for this topic and thank you for being here, because my inner critic is just mean. That's what it is. It's mean. It's not real. And I have to remember that every single day. So she slows down, but she's still there. Thanks, guys.
Hi. I am still far away from understanding exactly what my inner critic is, but it's definitely tied to perfectionism. And it comes out when I think about applying for a better job. Like, it tells me I don't deserve more money and I'll never get a better job. And I'm lucky to have what I have. And it's almost like I look at LinkedIn, like the LinkedIn logo, and this, it's not even a voice, just a sense of like, oh no, don't go there. Like, that's a place where you're going to learn how unworthy you are, how all your friends from college have these way more impressive, higher paying jobs. Like, why even go there? So I don't know very much about it, but it's sort of just like a force that moves me away from the steps I would need to take to get a better job. It just like keeps me from even starting. So yeah, that's mine.
Thank you, Andrea. Thinking about inner critics, I think that I have as many inner critics as I have every year of my life, maybe, but these are some of my IFS cards I've been working on identifying parts. So I thought I would go to them. And I have a magical thinker, and this is a little girl, and she's very impatient about therapy and IFS getting done. And she thinks that we're going to just one day have it and it'll be done and our lives will be unicorns and rainbows. And her voice says, you had one job in your whole life, and that was to fix your mom. And if you can't fix her, how will you ever fix yourself? And the voice is just programming. Mama made that apparent over and over again. It was in the family, being praised for being such a good, strong little adult, mm-hmm. for taking such good care of her sick mother. It was just kind of always there. And there's a lot of other parts, you know, the not good enoughs, the bullies. You get tired of hearing the voices. I have one in the middle of the night that when I get up, she starts talking shit and I tell her, shut the fuck up. Mm-hmm. And then I realized after IFS that maybe I need to give her a little space and be a little more respectful, because she's of course trying to do a job too. But anyway, that's just kind of what I wanted to say. And there's a lot of critics and everybody needs a lot of attention. And I've only been in IFS for, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 months. And it's like, how on earth do you ever get to all of them? So sometimes there's points of overwhelm within all of it. And anyway, that's it. Thanks for listening.
So that inner critic, it's not one voice. It's multiple voices for me. It's male, it's female, it's my mom, it's my dad, it's my brother, it's past teachers, it's past friends, it's a multitude of different voices, all clumped into one. That inner critic for me is self-worthiness of why am I here and why should I be here? Why should I be taking up space for people when other people matter more than myself? And Rachel, when you said you make a mistake or an accident, and mine is, you know, make a minor mistake, you fuck up and might as well just end your life because you fucked up. You're a fuck up. And it happens so fast when that inner critic hits you. Sometimes you don't know it's going to hit you. And it could be as simple as your partner, your spouse, or friend, when you're trying to explain something to them and they make a scoffing, they'll scoff at you and or kind of roll their eyes or make a sigh or some subtle gesture. And that's where that inner critic comes out so fast that you don't expect it. The inner critic for me right now has been dealing with this medical issue that I've been having. Last Sunday, I think it was Courtney was sharing. And as she was sharing, I literally felt this little sensation in the back of my left kidney. And I'm going, please don't, let's not do this. And so I had to leave the meeting, and sure enough, I have a full-blown 8-millimeter kidney stone. End up in the ER, hospitalized, morphine, Dilaudid, and Valium were pretty good stuff, good combination. That'll make you not feel anything. But that inner critic this time ago around on this kidney stone hasn't been there. It hasn't been there. It hasn't ridden anywhere during this whole kidney stone issue that I've been dealing with. And normally it's like level 100 of that inner critic of why I'm such a failure of producing these kidney stones. And I beat myself up for it. But not this time for some reason. I guess because, you know, when you're slowly working on yourself and working these steps and coming in groups and you can say what the fuck's on your mind and how this is affecting you daily, then it quietens that inner critic. That's what it's done for me. So thank you for letting me share, guys. Much love.
Hi, guys. Yeah, I think for me, the inner critic, you know, I never really thought about it being this thing until I started doing a lot of this work. And I think a lot of it for me comes from growing up being that parentified child and having to be that perfect kid that's there for everybody, takes care of everything, takes care of my mom, gets her through the tough days. And even through today, it kind of shows up for me. If I mess up at work and I make a mistake on something, I will be my worst critic. I will be harder on myself than anybody else could even possibly be. And I will think about it for hours and days even, and it feels shameful when I do something. And it can be something so small and trivial, but it'll stick with me. And I'll be like, why did you do that? Why didn't you look at this? Why didn't you look at that? Why didn't you handle that differently? And it will sometimes take days to kind of work through that. And I'm starting to realize a lot of it with my mom in particular. It's I think years and years of small comments that are made and things that we let kind of build up that we don't even realize are getting built up. A good example, even just this morning, I was on the phone with her and I was cooking some breakfast and she asked me what I was making. She's got this obsession with what everybody's eating and she's never had a healthy relationship with food. I don't have a healthy relationship with food. She, for the longest time, has always been very nitpicky about, well, what are you eating? And, well, why did you eat that? And, you know, well, you need to not eat that, and making comments all the time and comments about my weight. And it wasn't that long ago, I finally said to her, what is your obsession with that? Why are you so focused? Because it's not even just with me, it's with other people. And I said, why are you so focused in on everybody's weight and what everybody's eating? And she didn't really have a good answer for that. But this morning, you know, going to get off the phone with her, and she asked me what I was cooking. I told her, and as I'm hanging up, she says, all right, well, don't eat too much. And it was just that fast. It was that fast that the comment was made. And I noticed it. I didn't let it affect me like I normally would have in the past, but I noticed it. And I'm noticing more and more about things like that are said. And I think for years, it's also shown up for me in friendships and relationships and thinking that I'm not good enough for people to want to be my friend or to want to be with me. I don't share a lot of things about myself with people just for that very reason, because, you know, God forbid they get to know me too well and then they don't like something and they reject me. So it's easier to keep people at arm's length. And again, I think it's just that inner critic saying, you're just not good enough for people to stick around for. So I'm working through it. It's a tough one. And I think we'll all get there, but it takes a lot of work. And I've been doing this now, it's only been 3 years, but it's been 3 years, you know? And so on one hand, it's not very long. And on the other, it feels like a lifetime. It feels like I've been working on this all my life. And I just know it's not ever going to be something that I will not be working on, but I sure hope it gets easier. I sure hope it gets easier. Thanks, guys. That's all I got.
Thank you for everyone for sharing. I can see myself in most areas for my inner critic, like being perfectionist and underminer and just like making my whole existence seem like a burden in every area of my life, which isn't true, but it's just something that I'm like unlearning and try not to internalize as I go about my healing journey. I've noticed that yesterday was my cousin's wedding. And a couple months ago, my mom, she had reached out to me for the first time in a while, which was shocking to me because I really thought that she was going to reach out to check on me and ask how I'm doing after not like hearing from her for like a year or so. But the call was just her trying to ask me why my cousin didn't invite me to her wedding and what I did for her to not invite me, which kind of backfired because it wasn't really her genuinely seeing how I was doing. She just wanted to get more information from me and tell me how it makes her look bad that if she goes, if that I'm not going, but she's going. And I think later down the line, I'm not even sure if they did go. I didn't even catch up on that. But I feel like till now, like I'm trying to like tell myself that there's reasons why like the phone works both ways. And that for my relationship to end with my cousin years ago and for me to make amends to that, it has to work both ways. It's not me having to fix and be the person that brings like the peace and harmony in the family, because that's like not my job overall. So yeah, there's a lot I'm trying to like unlearn when it comes to like speaking to myself, but I appreciate everyone letting me share. Don't let it all go.